this is Martine Perry. I'm here talking with Pamela Davis. Pamela has a new album called Dear John, a John Lennon tribute. Hi, Pamela.
Hi, Martine.
How are you?
Well, you know, here we are doing our very first podcast about my latest release, which comes out on November 18th. Be in all the major stores, Amazon, etc., around the world, and you can listen to it on Spotify, Napster. I mean, there's such a list. I can't even keep up with everything anymore.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. So tell me a little bit about why you wanted to do this particular album and what, how I guess John Lennon has inspired you over the years.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, the Beatles have certainly influenced my life. And particularly John Lennon was my number one favorite Beatle when I first saw them. And, you know, I just loved it when John would put out an album in the 70s. And I was so disappointed in 75 when he stopped. Mm. And, you know, later on after he was shot, I mean, when John was murdered in December 8th, 1980, it was such a sad time. Because he had come back with Double Fantasy, and we knew this was the beginning of some major events.
Right.
And, I mean, his death was like JFK's death, like a complete shock.
Oh, absolutely.
Elvis died 3 years before in August, and that was really sad, too. But, you know, he sort of did it to himself.
Here, right.
John was just randomly shot in
murdered.
The back.
You know, murdered.
Yeah.
That's such a shocking, not what was expected.
Yeah. And, you know, so a few years later, they came out with a show called The Lost Lennon Tapes. And they started playing John's demos. And it was amazing to hear these songs that he was working on. Mm-hmm. And they actually mixed a whole bunch of demos. They did his demos from as early as 63 with like Bad to Me, which Billy J. Kramer and the Dakotas put out. back in 64. But the more important stuff was the later stuff he recorded from 76. All these gems. I mean, one of the first bootlegs after John passed, I heard the song Serve Yourself. And it was like four takes on an album size vinyl. And sort of knocking Bob Dylan for his album, You Gotta Serve Somebody.
Right.
And no, John's like, John would be like, hey, you don't have to serve somebody. You serve yourself, Dylan. You know better than that. And, you know, it's kind of a parody with the guitar.
Right.
You got to serve yourself. Ain't nobody gonna do it for you. You got to serve yourself. Ain't nobody gonna do it for you. Well, you may believe in devils. You may believe in lords. But you're gonna have to serve yourself.
It's funny, I was going to ask you about that song in particular, because when I was listening to it again, I mean, that's an interesting song because it is a reaction to Dylan at that time. And I think I'm sure you had a similar reaction to Bob Dylan's music at that time, you know, and you might want to give a little bit of backstory about what was going on with Dylan then.
I actually remember that was, I actually remember that because I was playing it out full time and I had opened when that first Dylan's album came out, Slow Train Coming. I opened for Steppenwolf.
Wow, okay.
And I do remember that. And I got the album right before I left for the show. And I'm like, what the heck is going on, you know? And some of the songs were wonderful. I mean.
Right, because I think he won a Grammy for one of the songs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, he won a Grammy for the album.
For the album, right. I mean, it was a critically acclaimed album, but it was a very different direction for him.
It got, well, he's Jewish, so it got really kind of hardcore on the born again
Christian
thing.
Right.
And, you know, it's like, When You're Gonna Wake Up, I thought was spectacular on that album. And of course, Slow Train Coming. And they came out a couple years ago with a bootleg series, Bob Dylan's bootleg series. And I mean, there's just a ton of unreleased stuff. And I have to say, from a writing point of view, wow.
Yeah.
And his voice was really good. I actually saw that performance. Actually, he was playing a smaller theater in 1980. You know, I remember it quite a bit. And he did mix in some of the other songs because he had got booed when he initially started the tour in San Francisco. Mm. He only played Christian songs.
Right, he wouldn't play his older stuff.
Yeah. But to get back to John's
reaction
to it, Well, what happened was, so he had these parody versions on guitar, and it's like going really fast, and he's just top of the head. But I think after a while, when John was starting to think about putting an album together, he started playing it on the piano. And he did about 6 takes of it. But what I found really interesting was the second take he did on the piano. He was really into something on that. And he did, you know, it was really kind of cool. He'd go into a shuffle mode and so forth. But I thought he kind of lost it on the third verse. So I actually took, either from take 3 or take 4, the third verse that he had done.
Oh, I see.
Or it might have been from take 1, but I had put that back. And I wanted to keep it sounding like his first official solo album, John Lennon Plastic Ono Band, because he had just a very small band in that. Mm-hmm. And his rule was basically 3 instruments, drums, bass, and whatever he was playing, piano or guitar. And, you know, I did add some guitars. There's a little instrumental part, and I played it the way I felt Yeah Blues was from the White Album. So I kind of mixed that up and kind of a shuffle feel on that. And I also used, I kept with the instruments that John played along with the other Beatles played to get the sonic quality. So I used the Epiphone Casino quite a bit along with Rickenbacker, his 325, I have a 350 and so forth. But on that one, I kept that kind of like groove, and I tried to play it the way John did. John had a certain way of kind of bending the notes that you can hear on I Want You. A lot of vibrato on it, and I tried to emulate that.
Cool. All right. So talk to me about maybe some of the challenges of covering these songs, some of which were unfinished songs, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
And the challenges of listening to the demos and then coming up with your own take on that.
Well, the interesting thing, so let's take the song, the title track, Dear John, and that happened to be the last song recorded before he was murdered. That was maybe about 10 days, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever. You know, listening to that, it was like, wow, this is quite a song. And it felt like his answer to his song from Imagine, Dear Yoko. And so what I tried to do was to keep it as straight ahead as I could, as John might have wanted to do it, but I was very aware of that. I wanted to make it sound like a double fantasy track, as if it was an outtake. So at the end of the song, I added this kind of circus feel. John had taken Sean to the circus, and on Beautiful Boy, he kind of added that Caribbean circus sound at the end of it and so forth. So I decided to write it in that way with the dun, dun, done and changed the feel around. I felt he might have done that. And that's the question in hand. What would he have done? You know, how he would have done it. How do you add these instruments? For me, I just keep listening to the demos and I start hearing the parts in my head.
Dear John, put the TV on. Well, have yourself a snack. Watch your mother's back. Relax. Race is over, you've won.
First thing I determine is, did he do it on guitar or do it on piano? So, you know, on that song, I felt it was definitely on piano, though I believe his demo was on guitar, where he had a certain groove, but I kept that groove and I kind of felt it might have gone more on his piano.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, so that was the idea. I tried to keep all the songs in the key that he did it to, studying his nuances on his singing, the way he would slur into words, the way he would enunciate, the way he would just kind of sing. And that wasn't a difficult thing. I mean, each song is like a period piece from John's career. And basically, per se, from the White Album right up to Double Fantasy, although on India, I made it sound like a 1963 Beatles song, particularly with the lead guitar part, and played a guitar lead style that George was doing quite prominently.
Mm.
I did use an Ovation guitar. John was playing a lot in the studio with Ovation Legend 6-string. I used a 12-string, and I used a baritone acoustic, which was not a popular instrument in John's time.
Okay, all right.
Thought I'd let you know that.
No, that's cool. Yeah. It's cool to know those kinds of things.
Yeah.
What he was playing and your reason for using instruments like that.
Yeah.
I think is cool to know.
Yeah.
Now, a couple of these songs the Beatles were going to cover on their anthology series. Am I correct in assuming that?
The one song that they didn't do, the third song was Now and Then.
Now and Then, right.
And George just said, you know, let's not do the song. It's terrible.
Right.
And I can't believe he's saying that, because it's like, wow, this is probably the best song he wrote in that period.
I have to agree. When I heard it the first time,
right,
I was really shocked.
Yeah.
That it was never, I was really shocked that it was never released.
Right.
Well, it's right up there with
Imagine.
I mean, in my opinion, it's any just those, as good.
Yeah, any of those.
So I was really shocked about Harrison's
comment. Yeah.
I mean, and he had a very aggressive comment about that song.
Yeah, he didn't like it.
When he did his interviews.
Well, they worked on it a bit. And, you know, Paul has said that someday he'll come back to it with Jeff Lynne and finish it off. And I hope they do. But my take on Now and Then was that I wanted to make it sound like that Beatle track.
Right.
And of course, I don't know what it really sounds like. And one thing that is on that is a George Harrison style slide guitar.
Oh, that's interesting.
That he was doing in the 70s. And I would use a Gretsch Duojet for the guitar enthusiasts to get that sound. I actually used the Gretsch Duojet a lot on my slide playing and even on my own compositions that I've done. I did it on Grow Old With Me as well, with that guitar and that style, you know. And then I used the Beatle bass, the Hofner. I have a 63 Hofner bass, which, you know, is amazing because it does sound, because of course it is the bass that Paul used. And I used it on that too. And I would try to play melodic lines the way Paul would have done it on all the tracks. I felt that, okay, I'm going to play every bass line like Paul did. And I would go between the Hofner bass and a Rickenbacker 4001, which Paul was using, well, from Rubber Soul, right on up, back and forth, and so forth. So I kept true in that sense, too. Is like this amazing song. And I believe there was one part of the song where I really had to warm my voice up because it's like a high B note.
Wow.
Or a high
C
sharp note.
Well, he sang high. I mean, he would go. He sang high.
Yeah. And as you know, earlier in the year, I put out another tribute album, which Marlene Dietrich, Marlene Rides Again. And I trained my voice to do her stuff. And it's funny because her voice was actually lower than John Lennon's.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And so it's like, so I was hitting these low notes with Marlena's tunes and then going with the John stuff. And then John comes out with this high note that he holds on for like 6 to 8 beats.
Yeah.
Very high note. And it's like, I had to really warm up for that one. Kind of threw me. But yeah, that's an amazing song.
That
now
is an
and
amazing.
Then.
Yeah, now and then. So, because you're a musician in your own right, you write music, you don't tend to do cover albums.
No.
So, had you always was this in the back of your mind always, or was there a this sort of come to you recently where like, I really want to do this, this particular album of these particular songs from this time period?
I really wanted to hear these songs. Yeah. You know, you're listening to the demos, and I was listening to the demos. I'm like, and trying to imagine what would these sound like had he recorded them?
Right.
Because, you know, I've had people go, oh, he's not singing really good. It's like, yeah, he's in the middle of composing. He's on
working,
pitch.
He's working it out.
He's on pitch. He's sounding great, but he's, you know, he's working it out, like you said. And he's not, these were never meant for the public to hear. We only heard these demos because he was murdered. And right. Everyone was so shocked that they did a radio show to sort of like, as a healing process.
Right. And these were songs, I mean, as most musician writers do, you write songs all the time. Mm-hmm. And some songs make it to albums. Some you just work on, right. You know, come to you in a day and you work on them. And that's what most of these songs were. I mean, maybe a couple were for certain projects, but majority of them, they were just songs he was working on in his kind of daily life.
Yep.
Because this was a period when he was, you know, was living in New York at the Dakota mm-hmm. and they had Sean. And so he was home a lot.
Right.
Correct?
Yeah. And he was working on a play called The Ballad of John and Yoko.
I meant to ask you about that because I had not heard of this play mm-hmm. before. I mean, right. I'd heard The Ballad of John and Yoko, the song, but I didn't know about this play that they were working on.
You know, I'm not an expert on the history part. I'm the musical side of things.
Right.
But like A Friend of Dorothy's.
Right.
That was supposed to be in the play.
In the show. Okay.
Yeah. And so forth. And you know, again, I thought that was an amazing song he did. It was on the piano, and Yoko's in the room, and he had on take one, I believe there's two takes of it. On take one, he had played it lower on the piano in the low register like he did Imagine, and Yoko suggested playing it up an octave higher in middle C. The song was in the key of C, and that really kind of changed it. And what was kind of cool was, on that one, he was playing the melody, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and so forth. And so I'm listening to that, and when you're doing a band arrangement, you go, oh, let's not do everything at once. Let's just do the chords on the piano, and then we can do a fancy lead of what he played for that melody as the intro. And I think that was kind of the trick. You know, that song kind of rocks. He was singing falsetto on that in the middle of it. And I kept it, like I said, I kept every song except Gone From This Place in the original key. Gone From This Place was just too low for me. I just couldn't hit those notes.
Okay.
And so I raised it up a whole step as a result. And Gone From This Place, Mama Papa told me, don't squander this place. He constantly played that in the recording studio in between takes.
Oh, really?
To the point where it's like, okay, John, can you stop playing that? Let's get back on track. And, you know, so that obviously was one that he's working. Very catchy. I kind of wonder, he sings Mama Papa Told Me. And I was wondering if he might have changed that. Mama might have told me or something.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of Mama Papa. But in respect to John, I kept the Mama Papa Told Me. And there weren't a lot of lyrics to that.
Mama Papa told me don't go from this place. Don't be gone from this place. Well, I won't be satisfied till I'm gone from this place.
songs, One of the Boys, he really only wrote one verse. And it's like, oh, great, you know?
Right, that's challenging. That's, you know, and, you know, I would imagine a little nervous to do a song
How do
like
you
that.
Do it?
How do you do it?
Well, what was funny was that I just phrased it differently on the second part. And I played it for people and they didn't even notice. And I'd say, hey, did you notice that it's the same words? No, you know, because you can just phrase it a little differently and so forth.
So he's no longer the boss on the town. He's just one of the boys. You know, they say that he's aged very well. He's still one of the boys. You know, he stays at exclusive hotels. Yep, he's one of the boys. It doesn't matter how old you are, you're as dumb as you feel right now.
That was one of the demos, early demos that I had heard. A lot of these started sneaking up in the early 80s somehow, before the radio show, I believe.
Before they did that radio show,
Lost Lennon, Dakota Tapes.
Right.
With Elliot Mintz. And so, you know, I believe that was one. You know, I just listened to the songs. And if you listen to something long enough, you can start hearing parts. Like I said, on She Is a Friend of Dorothy, with the lead guitar part, is like, oh, if I don't, he's got it in the piano. Mm-hmm. So if you're just listening to it, and then you're going to put a drum beat to, and you go, oh, you know, this was written in about 78, 79, so disco was still full in swing.
Almost like figuring out an equation, in a specific time period.
Well, as a songwriter and as a musician that plays all the parts, there's really no difference. I mean, the only difference was I'll write my own song, and then I'll start hearing the parts.
Right.
So once I started to listen to John's song, and, you know, there's no music. There's only one sheet music, which was available for Grow Old With Me.
Well, no, that's the other thing. You just had the tape. You just have really the tapes, correct?
And sometimes I'd have to correct speed them. And so I could play along with them. And nuances that John would do, it's like, yep, got to get that in there, and so forth. So that could be troubling. There was a song he did, Down by the River, or Gone to the River. And I was thinking of doing that. And there's only one take of it. It's a really cool song. It has that Crippled Inside feel to it, which I was going to go for that. I can't hear the lyrics. I've taken software and removed as much of the drum machine as I could. And it's sort of like he's mumbling. It's not picked up.
That's unfortunate. Yeah. But, you know,
it could be reconstructed because you hear the syllables and you start going, well, you know, if this album was popular, I would consider doing a follow-up to it. Because like I said, no one's breathing life into these. It's 39 years ago, this month in November, 2019, that John Lennon wrote Dear John, his last song.
Dear John, put the TV on, have yourself a snack, wash your mother's back and relax. The race is over, you've won.
Now, I think you told me that McCartney had just released some version of John's song, but I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, well, Ringo just had put out a new album, What's My Name?
Okay.
And Jack Douglas, the producer for John Lennon in that late period and mid period, he was an engineer, saw Ringo mention, said, did you ever hear the Bermuda tapes where John mentions you and says this would be a good song for you, Ringo? And Ringo said no, so Jack sent it to him, and Ringo felt compelled to record it. So he asked Paul to play bass, and he asked his brother-in-law, Joe Walsh, to play guitar. Of course, Ringo played drums, and he asked Jack Douglas to come up with a string arrangement. Jack came up with violin, cello, and accordion parts, and Ringo just released that. My song this album was finished up in way before I heard about this.
I was just going to say, had you heard that they were even doing this?
No, not a clue. I wouldn't have done it. In fact, I was thinking at the last minute to
back out.
To take the song off.
Oh, I gotcha.
You know, the whole project was that John never recorded these songs. Yoko released Grow Old With Me on Milk and Honey, but it was never finished. George Martin put a string section to it on a box set that Yoko released, but it's still the demo.
Right.
And I wanted to take it into a different direction. I wanted to make it sound, you know, John and the Beatles, basically. And, you know, the bass part, very melodic. George playing his slide on it, you know, doing the Ringo parts and doing Ringo fills. And I'm using the same drum kit that Ringo used with the Beatles. And I'm left-handed, but I have a left-handed setup. But I can still do his backwards tom-toms if I want to. So, you know, at times I would do that. So I actually have the tom-toms reversed on the drum kit. I have the 12-inch on the other side, my left side when I'm facing the drums, and the 13 on the right, whereas normally it would be reversed and so forth. So that makes it real easy for me to do that stuff anyway. Mickey Dolenz does that.
Okay.
I had people on social media go, oh, what's wrong? Don't you know how to set your drum kit up? It's like, yeah, I can handle this, you know, it's crazy comments. Mm. And then someone said, Mickey Dolenz does that too.
There you go.
It's like, oh, and I did not know that. I just experimented with it myself.
Any songs that you had considered that didn't make the album that you tried?
There weren't any songs really. I mean, there were always songs for consideration.
Okay.
Memories was one. When I was lonely and sad, I think it was called Saved My Soul. I considered that one. I actually turned those two down and decided to do My Life.
Mm.
Now, My Life, what's really cool is Yoko put that out on John Anthology album that came out. Of outtakes. And it was interesting she picked that. And it starts off very similar to Starting Over. Different words.
Right.
And a little different chord progression in a different key, in the key of G. Starting Over is in A.
My life, take it, it's mine to give. Take it, let me live in you.
Unfolds into something completely different. And then at the end of the song, the progression that he used remind me very much of Dear Prudence.
So That's interesting.
So what I did at the end was I added ahs and I added Beatle harmonies right out of the Abbey Road sessions. So more like Sun King.
Right.
And Because. So at the end of that, you have that kind of Beatle-y sound.
Yeah, it definitely has that kind of sound to it.
If you listen to the guitar work, I make it, I play it the way John and George would have interacted. My opinion of the way they did it.
Okay.
And I did them both on Casino. I don't generally like to do, use the same guitar on the tracks. Personally, I like to mix them up to hear different sonic qualities. But on that one, I decided, well, George had the same guitar. All three Beatles had an Epiphone Casino. Paul started that, and John and George got it. And that was George's main guitar on Sgt. Pepper, and that was John's main guitar through Imagine.
Oh, okay.
He kind of put it aside when he came to New York.
Interesting.
You know, that's what I really love about that song. So I chose that. And that would be quite a few times I did that on quite a few tunes. I knew on Whatever Happened To, I heard that song and I have it on an obscure bootleg somewhere and I'd forgotten about it.
Okay. Yeah.
And I believe it's called the Dakota Tapes. It came out on Virgitone, which busted.
I think it is called the Dakota Tapes, actually. That sounds right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the rarest because that was right off the tapes and it was very pure sounding. And that's the only place I ever heard Whatever Happened To. And I just heard that. I'm like, whoa. Now John's playing the guitar, in my opinion, the way they played on A Hard Day's Night. Very aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
Reminds me of Happy Just to Dance With You, which is actually a Lennon McCartney song that John wrote.
Okay.
George sings it, so some people think it's George's song.
And
Tell Me Why.
Yeah.
And of course, the very aggressive guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm listening to that, and I was going to play that on the Rickenbacker, which he would have used in that period. But I really just liked the sound of the Casino on that and used that instead.
Right.
What have happened to the woman we once knew? The rip is rising fast. And if she's listening now, trying to get the message somehow, don't burn the boats they built to last.
I love that, and I just love the way it rocked out. And, you know, kind of wondering, was that another song that would have wound up on the Ballad of John and Yoko play?
Oh, interesting. Yeah, probably. Yeah, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, talk to me a little bit more about his guitar playing and how you were influenced by his playing.
John Lennon's rhythm guitar just really got to me. I mean, even on a song like Hide Your Love Away, I hear that, and it's like, wow, just the feel on it.
Right.
John's guitar playing is absolutely biggest influence. I wasn't interested in lead guitar. That wasn't until years later and when I went off to school and studied it. I really wasn't. To me, the important thing of it was the songwriting, the execution of the rhythm, the feel, and of course, the singing.
Right. Well, I can hear it, and just the way you sing too. I can hear the influence of John Lennon in your vocal style.
Right,
it's very present for sure.
Yeah.
So, what do you hope people get from this album? Like, what is it you want to say with this album?
You know, I want people to enjoy John Lennon's legacy and appreciate all these lost songs of his. The demos are wonderful. Unfortunately, they were recorded on inferior equipment.
Right.
And so, you know, what I want people to hear is the genius of John Lennon. And even at the end when he was quiet, the thing, it just makes me sad. He never got to finish these songs.
Yeah.
And imagine a world where John Lennon was still alive today.
But I think about that all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
But what I hope people get away from the album is this, is that they get to hear these songs. And I'm hoping that there's a little bit of magic. I did my best. I studied John, not that I really needed to, but I went back and listened to all his solo albums and just tried to get certain sounds. So the song Illusions, Illusions Come, Illusions Go for Love or Money. I went back to the Mind Games album and tried to get that production.
Illusions come, illusions go. Something more.
song I did is certainly slated towards a production. Whatever Happened To, definitely try to get that Beatle Hard Day's Night feel to that song and so forth. But yet trying to do it in a John solo way. It was all methodically thought out in the point to give John the most respect. We know that John wouldn't have looked back and go, oh, I'm going to do this song as a Mind Games track. He wouldn't have done that. He was looking ahead. But because of what happened to him, the circumstances, I went back to do that. I felt that had I played it the way I wanted to, that would be disrespectful to him.
Right. And so, that's not what you wanted to do
no,
with this.
I wanted to show the love and appreciation, and it's kind of a thank you
yes.
to John and his family for letting us hear these wonderful tracks.
Yeah, I mean, that's an extraordinary thing that Yoko Ono has continued yeah. to release this material, because let's face it, some families would not, would not even let that happen
right.
because they're so protective.
Yeah. So, we have to thank Yoko for that, definitely. And, I hope that anybody that listens to it enjoys it.
Well, thank you, Pamela. It was great talking with you today.
It was great talking with you, Martine. And I hope we can do this again.
Very good. Thank you.